Hi, this is StoryCorps founder Dave Isay. StoryCorps' work of bringing people together through listening at this moment of massive political divide is more important than ever. But we need your help. If the StoryCorps podcast has ever made you laugh or made you cry or made you feel more connected to others, please join us right now and make a donation. Pause the podcast, log on to StoryCorps.org, click on the Donate button, and become a sustaining member today. $60 a year, $5 a month will help us record and tell stories that stand as a beacon of hope, truth, and meaning for all Americans. They are stories that can make America good again. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support. Also, don't forget to put podcast into the comments box so we know you're a podcast listener. Thanks again.
Hey there, podcast listeners. You can take the StoryCorps podcast with you with the NPR One app. NPR One finds you the best from public radio and beyond, national and local stories, many of which have nothing to do with the election, and your favorite podcasts. Find NPR One on your app store now. That's NPR One. It's the StoryCorps podcast. I'm Michael Garofalo. In this episode, we're going archive diving, deep into the thousands of interviews in our collection. We're looking for stories from people who took the long view in life. These are people who stuck it out, people for whom persistence and patience paid off. Take, for example, Bob Heft. He told this first story at his home in Saginaw, Michigan, surrounded by dozens of American flags. He was wearing an American flag polo shirt, which he explained he would buy in bulk so that he'd never run out. Even his car had flag decals covering most of it. Bob has a particular claim on our current flag. He designed it as a high school student. It was for a class assignment, but there was a problem. Bob's flag had 50 stars on it, and at the time, there were only 48 states. He had a hunch that more would be added soon, and as it turned out, Bob was right.
The Betsy Ross story intrigued me. And my mom and dad, they had a 48-star flag they received as a wedding present, which, of course, meant a lot to them. Well, I took a scissors and cut it up. I had never sewn in my life. I watched my mom sew, but I'd never sewn. And since making the flag of our country, I've never sewn again. So anyhow, we get to class. I had my flag on the teacher's desk. And the teacher said, "What's this thing on my desk?" So I got up and I approached the desk and I'm shaking like a leaf. And he said, "Why you got too many stars? You don't even know how many states we have." And he gave me the grade of a B minus. Now that a B minus isn't that bad of a grade. However, a friend of mine, Jim, he picked up 5 leaves off the ground. He's taping these leaves down to the notebook and the labeling, elm, hickory, maple. And the teacher gave him the grade of an A. I was upset. The teacher said, "If you don't like the grade, get it accepted in Washington, then come back and see me. I might consider changing the grade." 2 years later, I'd written 21 letters to the White House, made 18 phone calls. Now, you can imagine when my mom got the phone bill. "What's this number?" I said, "Well, Mom, that's the White House." So anyhow, I got this call, and it said, "Now, the President of the United States is calling you later on today." Well, at that time, Eisenhower was president. And he comes on the phone and he says, "Is this Robert G. Heft?" And I said, "Yes, sir, but you can just call me Bob." And he says, "I want to know the possibility of coming to Washington, D.C. on July 4th for the official adoption of the new flag." And so I have the grade book. It's encased in plastic. It's kept in a bank. My teacher, and he said, "I guess if it's good enough for Washington, it's good enough for me. I hereby change the grade to an A."
That's Bob Heft. He went on to be a public school teacher, college professor, and mayor of Napoleon, Ohio, before he passed away in 2009. Recently, I was talking with someone about the idea of hopping from job to job. You know, those statistics that say that people will change jobs 4 or 5 times before they're 30. Anyway, we were talking about how that's a relatively new idea. I mean, especially last century, when people found work, they mostly stuck with it. And this is a story about someone like that. Arthur Winston was born in Oklahoma before it was even a state. As a young man, he hopped a freight train heading west and ended up in Los Angeles. He got a job working on city buses. African Americans, like Arthur, couldn't drive the buses then, so they put him on bus maintenance, and that's where he stayed until 2006. Just a week before retiring from that job, when he was 99 years old, Arthur Winston came to our mobile booth for an interview with his great-nephew, Eric Givens.
What's the secret to working so long, and why do you do it?
Well, I like my job. You can't stay on any job 7 some years if you don't like it. So I got perfect record from 1934 until today. Missed one day of work.
That's about 72 years.
That's right. Missed one working day.
Now, has your job changed a lot?
It's changed a lot. Jobs have changed. Managers change. I still stay there.
A lot of people wonder how a person lives to be 100 years old. What do you think you did that allowed you to live so long healthy?
We're living too fast on junk food. Tastes good, but I don't fool with it.
A lot of people today try to do things to fight growing old. And the last time I talked to you, you had made a comment about Viagra.
We were talking about Viagra. No. Yeah. You don't worry about things you can't do. Don't worry about it. And trouble of it today, people seem like they can't get, they go to the store and then on these talking phones all day and night, trying to work and talk on them phones all the same time.
Right.
Everybody, kids got the little phones and they're talking. I don't have one of them. I don't need nobody to keep up with me that tight all day long and night. And I ain't going to keep up with nobody all day and night.
Right. What would you like to talk about?
We're going too far in life with credit card. Credit interest is killing you. People don't understand that. I don't have all of my credit cards.
Right.
I don't have to have all this luxury stuff. If I can't afford it, I don't bother about it. I can do without it.
What do you plan to do after you retire?
You can't wait till 99 to do all anything. See, I did a lot of going when
right.
I was all the way up. I've been all Europe, Asia, and all around. Hawaii and Bahamas and Puerto Rico and Tahiti and everywhere else. I rode a freight train further than some people rode inside. Wasn't scared to go nowhere.
Uh-huh. That's amazing. To be 100 years old, still working, still in good health, and still smart, bright.
If I go to think about how old I am, I won't be able to get up in the morning and go to work.
Right.
I don't worry about age. I don't think about it. Moses and all them other people, a lot of people have lived 800, 900 years. I think I'd go to live 900 like the rest of them or something else.
Well, I know you've inspired me, and I love you, and I think what you have to say is important. You've lived in a time and an era where so much has changed.
That's right.
And you're still here to talk about it. So thank you very much, Uncle Arthur.
Thank you.
Love you.
That conversation was recorded 10 years ago. Arthur Winston has since passed, but podcast producer Alicia Baitube and I recently got his nephew, Eric, on the phone. And it turns out Uncle Arthur's work streak got him some official recognition.
He got a commendation from President Clinton for being the American that worked the longest in U.S. recorded history without missing a day of work. And then I guess shortly after that, Oprah Winfrey got word of the story and he had pictures with her. He was super happy about that. And he got to hang out with the Laker girls who came to meet him and he got to take pictures with them. And he was pretty excited about those photos as well.
And while we were on that call, we actually found out quite a bit that surprised us about Uncle Arthur.
He had got hired by the 99 Cent Store. He was going to be a representative for them after he retired from MTA.
He was going to keep working.
Yeah, he was going to do another side job. Because he was 99, they hired him. So he was all fired up about that.
When did Uncle Arthur actually retire?
He retired actually on his 100th birthday, March 22nd, 2006.
So how long was it after he retired that he passed?
Roughly three weeks. He died sometime in April. My Uncle Arthur made it to 100. His younger brother, North, he lived to be 102 or 3. So he lived to about 2011.
So Arthur didn't even live the longest of his siblings.
Correct. He's just the one that lived the longest and kept working. And
he says he only took one day off.
Yes.
Do you know why he took that day off?
Yeah, it was the day that his wife died, Frances, my Aunt Frances. He had a pretty positive outlook on life, in spite of the fact that many people around him had actually passed away. when I interviewed him, that was probably the saddest thing about the interview. And the more I reflect on it, I guess that happens to all people that live a long time. You outlive your spouse, you outlive your kids. But most of the bus drivers that I've known, they pretty much all know who my uncle was. And when I would talk to them, like, oh yeah, Mr. Winston, he would hang out here and we'd sit around after work and he'd talk, or we'd go down here and have coffee or whatever. So he stayed active with people that were probably half his age, and it helped him stay pretty young too, I think.
How do you think Uncle Arthur would want to be remembered?
I think he would want to be remembered as an honest person, a hardworking person, and a person that tried to help other people whenever he could. And also as a person that was proud, not arrogant, but proud and not willing to take no extra stuff from anybody.
If you're in Los Angeles and you're curious, the Arthur Winston Bus Yard is at 5425 Van Ness Avenue near West 54th Street. It was, in fact, named before Arthur retired. So for the final few years of his career, Arthur would show up to work each day at a place that was named for him. We'll wrap up this episode with a story that should give some hope to anybody out there suffering from heartbreak. It's a love story that spans one war, three countries, and four decades. It all started in 1958 at a roller skating rink on the Indian Head Naval Base in Maryland. That's where Peter Hayden met a girl named Jackie.
I was there one night, and I saw this young lady skating around, and I waited for her to take a break and go get a Coke before I made my move.
He just grabbed my hand and whirled me around and said, "I'm Peter Hayden. Who are you?"
And she says, "My name's Jacqueline Lefevre." And I looked in those big green eyes, and I was a done deal.
From there, we started dating.
And in 1959, her father got transferred to Japan. So I decided, well, I'll go to Japan and get her. So I went and joined the Marine Corps and said, well, I want to go to Japan. The Marine Corps said, oh, you'll go to Japan when we tell you you can go to Japan. And I was home on leave and stopped by to see Jacqueline's mother. She said right away, Jackie got married. So I wound up re-enlisted in the Marine Corps. I said, send me overseas.
I just got married for all the wrong reasons, and I was very unhappy.
I carried a picture of Jackie in my pack for 3 years in Vietnam. We'd have a hard day. I'd just pull a picture out and say, I guess that's why I'm doing this. So I wrote her a letter, told her how I felt.
I don't know how the letter found me. It had all these forwards stamped all over the envelope. And he said, I love you. I've always loved you. I just have to get this off my chest and I'm done.
I did my tour and I came back from Vietnam. I spent 24 hours at home, and I went into my mother about 4 o'clock in the morning. I said, I got to go to North Carolina to see Jackie. And she kind of looked at me, and she said, I think you better leave that one alone, but I guess you got to do what you have to do.
And I sent him away. I came from a divorced family and didn't want my kids to have a broken home, and my husband was a very domineering, controlling person. If I left, he wouldn't let me have my children.
She said, you know, I'm not going to see you anymore. That was September 25th, 1968. And I didn't hear from you again until September 25th, 1998.
I had tried to call him off and on over the years, and I'd always call the operator and say, do you have a T.P. Hayden? And she'd say, no. And then in 98, I had made up my mind, I am just out of here. I'm so miserable. I'm so unhappy. So I said, well, nobody ever loved me but Peter. I'm going to go see if I can find him one more time. And the operator said, I've got a T.P. Hayden in White Plains. Then I said, oh, my God, that's him. I said, I have been trying to find this person for 30 years. It's the love of my life. She said, do you want me to dial a number for you? I said, yeah, you can dial a number. She said, can I stay on the line? I said, I don't care what you do.
And the phone rang. And she said, do you know who this is? I said, yeah, I know exactly who this is. He said, I bet you're mad at me. I said, no, matter of fact, I'm still in love with you.
It's really true.
It's worked out well. It's just sad the time we lost, but I got her back. So I won, you know? And she's just as beautiful as she was when she's 15.
That's Peter and Jacqueline Hayden. And that's it for this episode. Our stories were produced by me and Katie Simon. The podcast was produced by me and Alicia Itoop. Rate or review us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to leave a message for somebody on this show, give us a call at 301-744-TALK. That's 301-744-TALK. We pass your messages along to the participants, and we might even play them here on the podcast. Until next time, I'm Michael Garofalo. Thanks for listening.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Subaru, celebrating its 9th annual Share the Love event now through January 3rd. For every new Subaru purchased or leased during the event, Subaru will donate $250 to your charity of choice, including ASPCA, Make-A-Wish Foundation, Meals on Wheels, or the National Park Foundation. To learn more, go to Subaru.com/share. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.
Before we go, I want to tell you about a new podcast from NPR. It's actually the first NPR podcast in Spanish. It's called Radio Ambulante, and it takes a look at Latin America and U.S. Latino communities. It brings you stories you might not otherwise hear, stories about punk rock in Cuba, stolen books in Colombia, and junk bonds in Puerto Rico. Hosted by novelist Daniel Alarcón, Radio Ambulante tells Latin American stories from the inside. Check it out on the NPR One app and at npr.org/podcasts.